Want a more fault-tolerant data center? Bring the availability of cloud computing inside your data center with the only server built from the cloud up.
Great, thanks. So welcome to this edition of TechNet Radio. I'm Tommy Patterson, technical evangelist out of the Southeast in the U.S. Joining me today is Simon May. He's out of our core TPE team. Simon, welcome to the show.
Hi, Tommy. How are you doing?
Great. So as I go around, I do IT camps around the Southeast, and I talk to different roles. We've been doing Hyper-V, we've been doing Azure, we've talked about Windows 8, and we're going through that cycle again now on for the second half of Microsoft's year. We talk a little bit about VDI and remote desktop server, but tell us a little bit about, you know, your involvement in that, how you got into this role, and a little bit of your history.
Yeah, so I've been working with client infrastructure, basically, for pretty much all of my career, apart from a little tiny horrible segue where I went and did Six Sigma based process improvement for a help desk. That was kind of weird. But apart from that, I've basically been focused on actually managing and deploying desktops, making it so that people can access corporate information wherever they are in whatever kind of scenario they're in. For me, that was banks, basically, working for large financial institutions, making it so that really massive field sales forces for banks can actually access information. So we're talking hundreds of thousands of employees there in order to be able to access all this different information. And we used various different methods for allowing access. So it'd be kind of VPN access back into the corporate network. It'd be managing those devices with ConfigMan. It would be actually delivering virtual desktops to people on the devices that they were able to carry around with them. Obviously, banks were really interested in that kind of thing for a couple of reasons. Firstly, for those mobile guys, you have that massive advantage that they don't have to carry all of the kit with them. They can be opening up a fairly lightweight laptop and they can get secure access back into that data. It never leaves the data center. Secondly, though, one of the things that folks really forget about these environments is that, take a trade floor environment. The real skill of IT on a trade floor inside of a bank is not about whether they can make something more or less accessible for people. It's about whether they can reduce the latency of access to the data. And that's again where VDI comes into play. It helps reduce the latency of access because you're connecting to a remote session which is inside of the data center. So again, really super important stuff for folks to be able to do. And that's kind of one of the reasons why I love our new approach to VDI. You get to select like this part over here, which is going to be kind of the lower cost entry area where we're going to use what was terminal services, now remote desktop services. And over here you might say, hey, these guys have some higher capacity requirements, so we need them to have a VDI desktop where they get their own amount of RAM assigned to them.
Very cool. So my background as well, the last few years of consulting, before I came over to Microsoft, I was doing VDI projects and terminal server projects with Citrix, VMware, Vue, and also doing some hybrid environments within desktop. I saw some just native terminal services installations as well, but I really feel like 2012 and the release that we have now with Windows 8, the upgrades that we put in place technology-wise in the software really is helping us get to that point where VDI and remote desktop services is something that we can honestly give to hand to our end user or to our customer and say, we believe this is as good or better than what you could have as a native experience. In the past, it used to be very difficult to even try to say that. You know, in certain situations, you might can make it work. But now we've really bridged that gap. We've loaded faster. We're more smart about what we send over the wire. So I know you're going to kind of go through that with us. What do you think the key things that we changed that have really helped out in 2012?
You really hit the nail on the head there. It's all about making the experience feel local, because when we've been out there, and we don't just go and like create some software and hope it works. We actually go and talk to people. We get customers in. We find out what makes things usable to them, what doesn't. People actually told us they just want the experience to feel more like it's a local machine. They might be remoting to somewhere else, but they want it to feel more like it's local. So that means little tiny things like making sure that touch feels first class. If you've got a brand new device here, one of those nice little tiny Dell 8-inch devices, the Dell Venue 8 Pro, one of those devices, and you're remoting back into the data center, you want that to feel natural. If you're opening up something inside of Windows, you expect that when you bring the charms in, they're in the right place. When you go and tap on something, it's responsive. When you use three fingers in order to do a zoom, or two fingers or whatever, that it does the right thing. So it's about making the experience local. The subtlety of that, though, is that there are many things that people do where VDI experiences didn't make things feel local in the past. So browsing web pages is a really great example. As soon as you hit a big image, well, traditionally you've got to get that image from the server that's running the session back in the data center down to the client in some way. And typically that's bitmap updates of the screen. So it actually tends to be kind of painful. So we've done some real, like the engineering guys have done some phenomenal work here to make these aspects of the experience just more seamless, feel more like a local experience. They've also kind of taken into account the fact that when we do think about these big kind of field sales forces that people have, they're connecting over really different types of networks to the way they were doing this in the past. If we think about the types of networks where this kind of technology first came about, we're basically talking minimum 100 megabit per second, well-connected, well-routed LAN. And as a result of that, you kind of know that you're not going to get random packet loss, that the bandwidth is going to stay pretty high for the majority of the time.
Right.
Today's world, people are connecting over 4G LTE connections, 3G connections, 2G connections occasionally when things just drop out, when there's too much crowding around a cell tower. That cell tower actually starts to reduce the area that it covers. So you could start out being in a 4G covered area, then 1,000 people hit that cell tower. Suddenly, instead of it covering you, it just kind of shrinks in a little bit, and you'll drop from being in a 4G area into a 2G area.
Right.
That kind of stuff happens all the time. That's just the way that the network works. So the engineering guys have thought about that, and they've changed some of the ways that we are delivering content inside of a VDI session.
Right. The challenge has changed. I mean, back then, we were working at Starbucks, and they had a good connection, or, you know, some other method, even dial-up in the back in the day.
Yeah.
You know, you would try to present as little as possible so that they didn't have many choices, but they could at least get their work done.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked well.
Yeah.
But you talk about holding it local. Well, local means a lot of things these days. It doesn't just mean I can do my job, be able to get to things online. And, you know, there's more, I would say the criteria for what needs to be on the desktop has changed, and the connectivity has changed. So very cool stuff. Now, we've got a few technologies that we're going to highlight today, those top technologies that we've made in 2012. You want to highlight what those are before we jump into them?
Yeah, so we've some of the stuff that we've actually built in there. We've got the, from a hardware level, in 2008 R2, we introduced this idea of Remote FX, which basically took a graphics card and kind of chunked it up or virtualize the graphics card as well, just like it virtualized the CPU. In 2012 and 2012 R2, they took the branding around RemoteFX and extended that. So it wasn't just about hardware, but it was about the software technologies that enable a more local rendering of the desktop that you're connecting into. Mm-hmm. And as a result, that now means that we worked out that not everybody had like one of those really nice liquid cools graphics cards that worked with RemoteFX inside of their one new pizza box servers. So we've actually been able to create the soft GPU. So now by default, you get the ability to do things like 3D rendering inside of all of your VDI environment, inside of your remote desktop services environments. Just kind of happens by default. And if you have that hardware in the background, which you might still have if you're doing kind of remote heavy workloads, like we see in automotive where they're doing kind of really heavy CAD diagrams and that kind of thing, and CAD renders. Mm-hmm. They do that kind of stuff remotely as well, but they kind of have the investment in the hardware to make that work. Not everybody can do that, so we thought we'd extend those areas out. We've also extended out the thought of being able to cope with what's happening on the screen with the idea of adaptive rendering.
Mm-hmm.
So we now, inside of the remote session, look at what's happening on screen and say, hey, you know what, that's a video. That needs to be rendered like this. you know what, that's a picture. We need to render it like this. That's some text. We render it like this. And we also think, well, actually, you know what, that's a video. So not only are we going to render it slightly differently, but we're going to send the data to the client device slightly differently. So previously, and we'll see this a little later on in the demos, we actually sent all of that data down as TCP packets. Well, we all know what happens with a TCP packet. You send a TCP packet, you get an ACK back. Now, when you're doing a video, which is running at 40, 60 frames per second, that's 40 to 60 ACKs that have to be sent back. And that just starts to cause this real jitter on the network. And it gets you get a really jittery, stuttery video. Mm-hmm. So now that's all done as UDP, essentially fire and forget. The packet hits the client renders it. The packet misses the client doesn't render it, you drop a frame in the video. You drop two frames, three frames. The video remains relatively watchable during that period. And that's the idea of the adaptive rendering stuff. And I think the really key thing, and one of the areas where we start to see Microsoft really begin to look around the world and go, hey, you know what? Not just about us owning the client anymore, is that we can now we actually now have first-party clients for iOS and Android as well as for Windows, which means that you get a really good quality experience by using those clients, because you know what, they're using the latest version of the protocol, which is what you need to have in place in order to be able to get all of this stuff.
So what you're saying is the remote desktop connection app that we have on all three stores, Windows, the Microsoft Windows Store, the iOS Store or App Store, and then the Android Store, those are all built with the new protocol that's native to our technology, so that we can take advantage of all those great things we just talked about.
Cool.
So just for anyone who's watching, if you're trying to build out a lab environment for this, interestingly enough, if you have like some of the later media cards in your laptop, you can actually pull this off. So check out virtuallycloud9.com. I've got a lab out there around building remote desktop services, and I've built it with two Lenovo W530 machines, both NVIDIA cards. I was able to enable that hardware piece there for the 3D. So really cool stuff. Simon, are you ready to show some of what you're talking about?
Yeah, let's show some of this stuff in action. So here I've got my my desktop, and this is a desktop where I've connected into two other subsequent remote desktop sessions. If we look at this first desktop session here on the left-hand side, I'm not going to zoom in and out on these because it will kind of make you feel a little bit seasick on the video. But on the left-hand side, we have a Server 2008 R2 Remote Desktop Services Session Host Server. And on the right-hand side, we have one which is running Server 2012 R2, and again running the Remote Desktop Server Remote Desktop Session Hosting role. Both of these servers are actually virtualized on top of Hyper-V on exactly the same hardware.
What kind of hardware are we talking about here? I mean, is this a big, big, huge machine or what?
Well, I'm kind of lucky. So I've got access to a pretty huge machine in the background. The machine that's actually running these two sessions is running a bunch of other stuff as well, but it's a 32-core server, and it's also got like half a terabyte of RAM in it. So it's pretty beefy. However,
but these machines, these virtual machines, aren't that big, right?
No. They're not that big, and they're identical as well. So they're both running off of exactly the same storage, which is on a cluster shared volume, which is backed up by storage spaces. They are both running on four virtual cores inside of each virtual machine, and they're both consuming around about 2.5 gigs of RAM, although they've got dynamic memory in place so they can peak up as much as they want to inside of the overall virtualization host's memory capacity. So what we're going to do is have a quick look at the experience and see how similar it is on both of these and how it's different. The very first thing that you'll notice on my left-hand side screen up here, which is running running 2008 R2, you'll notice that I've upgraded Internet Explorer to Internet Explorer 11. No real reason for that, other than I didn't want there to be any kind of anybody out there saying, hey, you're running a different version of Internet Explorer, it's doing different things. I just wanted the same version there. So we support IE 11 on Windows 7 and on Server 2008 R2. So that's exactly what we're running. And we're looking at right now at the really cool Microsoft Stories website, Microsoft.com/Stories. So this is where you can find out about all the really interesting stuff that we do inside of Microsoft, as well as all of the products that we create. So we can go to things like the Microsoft Garage and understand what's kind of happening inside the garage, which is a kind of hobbyist place that we have on campus where people can start to build their own different projects. So if we start
I definitely need to go visit there next time I'm out.
That would be very cool. I think so. I need to find it, actually. I'm out here all the time. I have no idea where it is. But you can see that I'm scrolling down this webpage, and it's looking kind of nice, and things like the story elements of this are just kind of flying in without seeing a circuit disappear, all that kind of stuff. Exactly the same thing happening across here, except you notice there is something slightly different in the way that it's appearing on the 2012 machine as well. So you can see it's just kind of jumping in and kind of going fuzzy and then giving me more detail. Another thing I'm going to do, I'm just going to go across here to this video, which is inside of our YouTube player. And I'm just going to press play. They're both in around about the same point in time. And what you can see is that they're both kind of... did I actually hit that one? They're both kind of playing through and look pretty reasonable. In fact, let's hit refresh on both of those videos. It's always a nice thing to do to load up a fresh copy of the video. There we go. Both playing through. Both look kind of reasonable. And finally, I've also got on both these machines this kind of 3D CAD rendering app, which is here we go in the background. Well, let's get back to that. There we go. So that's actually doing a live render of the images, not a video. It's actually real time. It's got all the details in there for this this CDU thing that you see at the airports. It's actually doing that as a live render. And there's no 3D graphics hardware in the background here at all, which is kind of cool. Both of them can cope with it pretty well. The 2012 R2 server copes with it really, really well. I'm now going to do something off-screen, which is I'm going to play around with one of those really nice cool features of Hyper-V in Server 2012 R2, which is the ability to change the amount of bandwidth which is allocated to a virtual machine. You might actually want to do that inside of a VDI environment, because by limiting the maximum bandwidth that anybody's got available, you start to prevent what's called the noisy neighbor syndrome, which is whereby two people, say, have unlimited bandwidth, but then somebody starts downloading a really big file and it slows both people's connections down. So we avoid that by using bandwidth throttling. I'm going to do something interesting. I'm going to drop the bandwidth throttling down so that we actually drop down to a maximum bandwidth of 1 megabit per second for both of these connections. So both servers now have a maximum 1 megabit per second bandwidth utilization. You can instantly see kind of what's happening there. On the 2008 R2 screen, we're now actually rendering everything in a kind of progressive one line, one line, one line, one line thing, whereas our Server 2012 R2 virtual machine is actually running through kind of smoothly still. It's not completely smooth, we're still dropping frames, but it's looking a lot better. I'll go and drop out of the CAD render here and go back to that video.
And just to be clear, there's no, we aren't using 3DFX cards.
No.
Right, so this is all just software driven for this demo.
Very cool. Totally software driven. And this is, I think, kind of the most instantly noticeable thing. So again, we're still running at the 1 megabits per second. In our right-hand side window here, we've got a flash video being played, which is playing smoothly. On the left-hand side, we have a video which is kind of chunkily having to render kind of a couple of lines, couple of lines, couple of lines. It's dropping a lot of frames. Right-hand side, 2012 R2, still watchable. Left-hand side, 2008 R2, kind of not such a great experience by this point. So that's what the difference is of a few years' worth of innovation inside of the space. And folks out there, at this point in time, every time I show a demo like this, they go, yeah, but inside of our organization, nobody watches YouTube videos on a remote desktop session. Well, kind of, actually, flash video is the most popular method for using for online training. So if people are doing some kind of online training, maybe you have some compliance training that you have to get through, just like we have to do our very funny course every year somewhere that requires us to kind of sit there and say, that we definitely know how to deal with the various aspects of the legal requirements of working for Microsoft. Folks out there have to do the same thing. You might not have it in your organization, but it's pretty important to a lot of people. And then there's this one final thing, which for me makes it feel like the much more local experience. I'm just going to bring both of these up. And again, you can see that I'm going back to that story. The left-hand side, if I try and scroll up and down the page, it'll have to do the progressive one line at a time thing. It's kind of hard for me to keep the flow of what's happening. Whereas on my 2012 R2 machine, I go over here and click it on it, we just kind of get these progressive re-renders of the screen. So it gives us a picture, it gives us the text on the screen so I can read that first. And actually what it's doing is it's loading the pictures and then filling in a little more detail. I'll hit the back button on both of these, and then you really start to notice that that is what's happening. So I can already start to interact with the page here on my Windows Server 2012 machine, mm-hmm. whereas on my Server 2008 R2 machine, that's still loading the images. So I'm already starting to get the advantage of using 2012 R2. I'm starting to be able to use websites the way that they were intended to be used, and I can start to browse through them. Let's go and find the same story here. I'll just click down and wait for that to re-render the entire page again. Off it goes. And eventually I can, hey, see that that's the picture of Andrew Kim. I can't click it yet because it's not finished loading the entire page. Now I can click and we'll load up our story about Andrew Kim. Whereas down here, I'm able to start moving through again. So
I got to imagine that the amount of bandwidth that it takes for that 2008 R2 connection, much higher, right? I mean,
yeah.
There's TCP retransmits going on and trying to catch up with every little click when it has to redraw the screen. And over here on the right-hand side,
yeah,
we're seeing things instantly. You know?
Yeah, yeah, we just don't have that issue. It's kind of cool. And we've really limited this down to 1 megabit per second. It's kind of a little bit overkill, really, to be honest. But it gives you the idea of what's happening. I'm just going to off-screen bring myself back up to using the full bandwidth. And then we'll start to see that actually, at full bandwidth, the experiences are pretty similar to each other. So
yeah,
there we go, back again. And that's kind of what we've done to make the experience feel more local. I can browse web pages properly. I can use my applications as they were intended to be used, even over relatively low bandwidth connections. And you know, we reduced bandwidth there, but we might have also wanted to simulate increasing packet loss. I didn't do that because it's more difficult to do inside of this environment than it is to just go and grab a Hyper-V feature and say, hey, can you manage quality of service for me? But it would do the same kind of thing. And the last thing I think that's really important when we're talking around and looking at the client improvements, we've actually made it easier for people who don't necessarily have all of the information that they might need to connect into a remote desktop environment to get connected. So this is my this machine here is my Windows Server, sorry, my Windows 8 machine. It's actually running Windows 8.1. I'm just going to go in and I've already downloaded from the Windows Store the Remote Desktop app. So this is the new Remote Desktop app inside of Windows 8. And then I've got these two options here. I can either use a Remote Desktop Gateway Server, or I can use access Remote App and Desktop Connections, which is what I'm going to do. So we'll do that. User then, all they have to do is enter their email address. Dana, whoa, can I spell it right? Corp.contoso.com.
Good old contoso.com.
Yeah, they're into all sorts of different things at the moment. So we'll do the yes on that. It's then gone off. It's found basically a text record inside of my public DNS, which is well documented now on TechNet. And it's then seeing the published URL from my remote desktop web server. Mm-hmm. I hit yes. It's going to ask me for my creds again. This time I'm just going to do that in the other way, Dana. And enter his password. Say remember credentials. But notice I can also do sign on with a smart card here. That's because I've got a smart card reader attached to this machine, funnily enough. And that's going to go away. Find all of the resources that have been assigned to me as a user inside of the environment, and then it'll add those into my machine. So this is important. It's noticed that I don't have any remote desktops assigned to me, and I have 3 apps assigned to me. Mm-hmm. Gives me access to those apps directly here, but moreover, if I go back to my start screen, what I can actually do is go down to my all apps area, and then across here under work resources, I actually see my work resources which have just been published out to me from my remote desktop server. I'll hit.
And you can pin those to your start screen.
Yeah, absolutely. They can be pinned just like a normal app to my start screen. So we'll connect him up, and now we're going to obviously get to see the best version of Calculator, not the version that comes with your Windows 8 client. It's the version that comes on the server. Apparently, servers are just better at doing calculations than desktops are. I've heard that nasty bit of FUD floating around out there. It's the best reason that I can think that you'd want to publish the Calculator app off of the server as a remote app. But what we'll see in a second when it loads up is something which is, again, kind of important when we start to look at this kind of more touch-centric world that we're starting to see emerge. And that is that the app itself is going to be rendered as if it's a local app. What that means is that when we see areas of transparency inside of an app, particularly apps that were built a few years ago that took advantage of things like Aeroglass, what we started to see was that, say you had a grey background on your remote desktop services server or on your VDI session, mm-hmm. when you delivered that down as a remote app to a client machine, they kind of had this weird greyness to them. And the reason is that they were showing the desktop of the server, not that nice family portrait that you've got set to your Windows desktop on your local machine. And that was kind of disconcerting for people, particularly so when you find applications like, say, Office 2013, where the edge of the screen was actually, to make it more touch-focused, it actually has a really big area of what's called alpha shading, or transparency. See, I can just drag this around and it feels very local. For my drag, it doesn't kind of leave me with black traces all over the screen anymore, which is what would have happened previously. That's because we now are reflecting the transparency of the client machine rather than the transparency from the server. So little tiny improvements that have all come together to make the client experience way, way better than it was previously.
Very cool. So this again, this app that you're in, this new remote desktop app, that is the latest one and running the latest protocol, and it's available on any of the different stores that are out there for different devices. So I like that. It's easier to get to, you know, people with the new BYOD initiative. You know, people are bringing in whatever device they'd like to use, making it easy to allow them access to certain applications no matter what device. That's the top of everyone's mind, but we want to make sure it's secure. And it looks like you're logging in with your regular work credentials or the smart card, and very little setup involved, so that will look very seamless. So well done.
Yeah, and there's I'm just going to show one thing now, that I've got an and finally in here, which is always fun. So we also thought about the administrative experience as well when we were doing this. And one of those things that it's really gets to be a little bit clunky is when you're remote desktoping into a machine and then remote desktoping from that machine to another machine. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, this entire demo has been done by remoting in to another desktop. So I'm remoted from one desktop to another desktop and then hopping across to my remote desktop services servers. So when I'm hitting play on this video over here inside of my Windows Server 2012 environment, I'm actually playing that to a remote client and then replaying that straight down to me. What's really happening under the hood there is we're sending all of that video stream as UDP packets from the remote desktop services server down to the client I'm connected to, but then just hopping from that, sending the packets all the way down to my client installed on my local machine. So it's kind of neat that the way that we can do this kind of nested view of remote desktop services and RDP connections now.
Very cool. So that would also lower your bandwidth, you know, if you're doing that kind of thing. Another use for this would be, you know, overseas developers.
Oh, yeah.
They've got to get on and do a little bit of training here and there, or they need to watch some instructional how-to on a certain feature that we've just rolled out. You know, if they were to say, well, I can't watch videos at work, probably wouldn't get a lot of work done.
No.
These days, I'm looking at stuff all day. You know, how can I do this faster? So I think we need to make sure when we enable our customers to do work or to train or to investigate new ideas that we don't limit them just because of a network technology or a 3D rendering technology. We take that off the table. Now it's just a matter of what's the policy for corporate.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So how do I get access to this stuff? Yeah. Very nice.
Great. Thanks, Simon. Always a pleasure to have you on the show. Any other closing thoughts you want to throw out there?
Well, I think the only other thing that I want to actually mention is that we're going to have a follow-up to this show where we're going to actually look at the back end of this, because that was all nice and fluffy and we did, you know, lots of nice rendering stuff and showed kind of what the end user experience is like. But Tommy, we're IT guys. We need to see this properly. We need to see the nuts, the bolts, the infrastructure that actually runs all this stuff. So in the next episode, we're actually going to have a look at that. We're going to build out some of the infrastructure, put some of the things in place, make some of the niceties happen, like being able to do that DNS discovery, for example.
Right. Right. Excellent. So Thanks, everyone, for joining us today. Look for the next episode as well, where we dive into the deep dive in this. And once again, thanks for being on the show.
Anytime.